The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now, for those of you who are watching the Olympics, breakdancing was a novel introduction to the Paris Olympics, and it gave us all a great laugh. Cameron is here to tell us about Raygun.
Yeah, Raygun, you might have seen clips of her.
Yeah, as I recall.
She was going to bring her own unique take to breakdancing.
Now, I actually didn't see it. I've heard people talking about it and laughing about it. What did she do?
It's kind of hard to interpret what she did. So she brought her own creative style. She said in the lead up and afterwards that she knew she wouldn't be able to compete with the more athletic styles of some of the breakdancing, because if you watched it, some of the moves that were on show were absolutely astounding. But hers were... Yeah, I think unique is probably a good way of describing it. Kind of sort of, I could do that sort of thing. And I know people say that during the Olympics anyway, but it really was a bizarre display.
Crawling on the floor.
She did kind of like a crocodile mouth shape on the floor just across it. It was kind of weird. So listen, fair dues to her. I think you can probably ask questions to the Australian Olympic Committee for sending her. But... it gave us a laugh. At the very least.
That prompted you to go looking at other great sporting chancers.
Yeah, because we've seen people go to the Olympic Games before and try sports for the first time. So I think in 1896, the first discus champion, a guy called Robert Garrett, had never held a discus before he turned up in Athens and was training with something that was like four times the weight of it, and ended up getting a world record and the gold in the first ever games, the first ever discus competition.
Simply because he'd been throwing something heavier.
Well, just
and the real one then flew.
Yeah. The Greeks couldn't really make head nor tail of him because it was a really big Greek sport at the time. And then famously in Sydney in 2000, there was Eric the Eel, who was from Equatorial Guinea, representing Equatorial Guinea, had never swam in an Olympic-sized pool before getting in that day, and has become a bit of a cult hero in Olympic circles. So you can do it first time, but...
What was his event? How many metres?
I think it was the 200-metre.
Because he was probably 100 metres behind by the time he finished. Yeah.
I think everyone was just willing him on at the end. It had a very run, fat boy, run kind of element to it. But... I went and did a deep dive on sort of sports greatest hoaxes, which is different to like cheats, because these people actually made a career out of just bluffing their way through. Turns out football has fallen victim to it quite a number of times. So
tell me about Ali Dia. Who is he?
So people might have heard this one. This is quite famous. And in the run-up to the Premier League, it's a good one to revisit. So in 1996, George Weah, who was a AC Milan striker at the time, the FIFA World Football of the Year, was apparently ringing up a load of managers in the Premier League about his friend slash cousin, depending on the account you hear, about this new player who they definitely should sign. West Ham manager Harry Redknapp thought it was a wind-up.
Straight away,
he was like, nah, you're...
He's a wind-up merchant himself, so it takes one to know one.
Exactly. He spotted it from a mile away, taking the mick. Tony Pulis, who was at Gillingham at the time, said, yeah, I don't think so. But Graeme Souness said, no, let's hear this guy out, Liverpool and Scotland player who was managing Southampton at the time. So Dia turns up. He takes part in a sort of trial at a Southampton training. His new teammates, not really impressed with what they've seen so far, but it's funny. These things often happen in a sort of perfect storm environment. So Southampton had an injury crisis at the time, and he was put on the bench for their game against Leeds. 32 minutes in, their star striker Matt Le Tissier had to come off. On comes Dia. If you watch it on YouTube, he does kind of look a little bit lost. It was one of those, his first chance through on goal was kind of, you know, magnetic repulsion, where the ball just seems to kind of go away from you no matter how quick you go. And he was hauled off 53 minutes later, replaced by another substitute. Souness in the post-match gave his kind of, he was quite reflective on what had happened.
We have had this lad train with us for a week, and he's shown in training that he's lively and sharp. And we intended playing him in a reserve game in midweek, but because the weather was so bad, we couldn't get him on. And then we found ourselves yesterday with two strikers in the club, and that was Matt Le Tissier and Egil Ostenstad, who were both started the game. And we thought, we have a problem, we're going to want to throw on. So we've registered him for a month, and he didn't do well today. He didn't get a kick of the ball, but you know, he wasn't alone in not doing well today. And you know, we won't judge him just on 60 minutes that he played. We'll have a look. We've got 3 weeks to have a look.
It doesn't come across there, but you can see Souness looking quite bereft and go, oh, have I fallen for something here? And he said, we'll see how the next 3 weeks go. Dia didn't even make it that far. 2 weeks into his Southampton contract, he was axed. He was kicked out. He maintains that he knew nothing about the ruse. He said he was made to look like a con man. I employed an agent when I came to England and he's the con man. He must have been the one calling all these clubs pretending to be George. George Weah, by the way, maintains that he never met anybody called Ali Dia, and the Senegalese Football Federation, who he apparently had 13 caps with, had no records of him either. But Dia has crawled back and he's kind of rode back and said, look, he's not my best friend, but I do know George Weah.
Now, he actually ended up playing football. He was released by Southampton after a couple of weeks, not surprisingly. But he did play football.
Yeah, he went to non-league Gateshead, scored 2 goals in 8 appearances for them, and then kind of goes into relative obscurity, but is one of the most famous Premier League hoaxes to date.
Amad Laetitia described his appearance, 53 minutes of it. He ran around the pitch like Bambi on ice.
That's a good description of it. Yeah.
Now, we want to go to Paris Saint-Germain, which was a merger of two clubs, Paris Football Club, Paris FC, and Stade Saint-Germain. Now, where do we find the hoaxer there?
So this is Živko Lukic, who kind of profited off two things. One, a relatively nascent club who were looking for players. They really needed to get some players. So Paris FC, along with 20,000 other investors, provided the funding. Stade Saint-Germain provided the stadium, but they needed players. So they brought in Jean Jorkev, who was the French football captain and father of Yuri, who went on to win a World Cup with France. But they needed someone else. There was a boom at the time in French football where they were buying players from Yugoslavia because it was behind the Iron Curtain. They wanted to get some people in who had a good adaptability, good technical ability, and were relatively cheap. So in the 60s, Red Star Belgrade were the kingpins of Eastern European football, and their rivals, Partizan, also had some pretty good players. So Ilija Lukic, who went to Rennes, was a famous example. Now, this guy, Živko, purports to be his brother of Ilija, this really famous player, signs after being apparently highly rated during his time at Partizan Belgrade, played their first ever game, was their first ever foreign player to line out for the Parisian club, and played their first game against Kvili in Ligue 2 on the 29th of August 1970. Came off after 53 minutes, and that was the totality of his Paris Saint-Germain career. He was terrible. He still managed to pick up a medal at the end of the year because they got promotion to Division 1, but it turns out he had embellished his credentials at Partizan Belgrade. He played one youth game for them in 1963 and then was turfed out and became a dentist, but was quite opportunistic, went over to Paris, said, I might make a career of this. And there was nothing about him on the internet until about 80 years ago. He died in 2015, and a year later people went and said, well, let's have a look at this. And yeah, he pulled a fast one on the Parisians.
Now, perhaps the most notorious of them all is the professional footballer who never actually played football, Kaiser.
This is incredible. He might be the greatest con artist, I think, ever, let alone in football, I think, just in general. So this guy, Carlos Enrique Raposo, known as Kaiser because of his resemblance to Franz Beckenbauer, the famous German captain, he signed a contract with Mexican club Puebla in 1979, Brazilian guy. After impressing at a training session, never played a single game for the club. And Renato Gaucho, one of the finest Brazilian players of his generation, along the same time as Kaiser, said he was the greatest footballer to have never played football. So he would go around these clubs impressing powerful figures, telling them he had this impressive football CV. He'd get in with the journalists around it, players, the club owner, basically creating this hype event. Who's this Kaiser guy? He seems really interesting. Signed for Fluminense, Flamengo, Vasco da Gama, all of these huge Brazilian clubs, never made an appearance. So when you look at his Wikipedia page, you see all these clubs and then just 0-0, 0 appearances, 0 goals for every single one.
So how did he avoid playing?
Well, he would turn up on the first day and it was usually a muscle injury. So he'd have to come off, was out for an indefinite period of time. Sometimes he'd pull out the classics. He seemed to have a steady stream of dead grannies on regular occasions. I can't play today, sorry. On one occasion, they brought in a witch doctor to see if they could cure him. And Kaiser just said, no, that's not going to work. This is so serious that not even the supernatural and the spiritual can cure me. He was still somehow managed to convince people he was talented. He just needed the right time. It was sort of right place, wrong time sort of thing for Kaiser. But they still thought he was worth a punt and managed to make a career of it.
And he counted among his friends Diego Maradona.
Yeah, because he was in with all these players and could manage to convince people. There was one, he went to Bangu in 1985 and they had this notorious owner who was known as the most dangerous man in Brazil at the time. So he goes, he gets in good with the owner. The owner likes his chutzpah, basically. And then he's dancing the night away in this nightclub at 4 a.m, gets a call from his coach saying, we need you for this really big game tomorrow, a really big game. They were on the cusp of promotion, I think, at the time in 85. And he's told, you're not going to be playing. You'll just be on the bench. But they were 2-0 down after a very short amount of time into the game. The word comes down from the owner's box, send him on, send our talent on, finally. Let's see what he's made of. And Kaiser is very worried because he knows this guy's reputation and said, look, if I go on and play terribly, it's not going to end well for me. If I stay and refuse, it's not going to go well for me. So when he was warming up, he apparently heard someone use a homophobic slur towards him because he had long hair and it was a certain time in Brazil and a homophobic slur was used against him and used it as an excuse to get into a fight with the crowd and got sent off before he could come on. So it's pretty ingenious.
Fantastic. Kaiser the con man. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much for that.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.